Welcome to Friday Morning. Evan Bray, as you hear Led Zeppelin. There were a few of us last night on hand in Regina at the casino for Led Zeppelin. It's the cover band, if you will, that have been touring for like 39 years covering Led Zeppelin music. And I got to tell you, they're pretty good. I went in with low expectations. It was a bit of a celebration for a buddy of mine. So we went out for supper before, and then we went to the show at Casino Regina. But I went in going, I don't know. I mean, I like Led Zeppelin, but do I like Led Zeppelin? Well, turns out I do. They are they're a pretty entertaining band. They did some great Led Zeppelin classics. But I have to be honest. I think what it was, and I was thinking about this as I was driving home and talked about to Jody about this when I got home. I think I just needed a break. Like, I think this Charlie Kirk thing, I have to tell you, for a guy, I did not follow Charlie Kirk closely, but it's weighed on me. I find this to be a very difficult time in our history. And I know people will point out this is the United States, not Canada. I get that. But don't kid yourself. This is what an attack on democracy looks like. And I just found the last couple of days have been very tough following this case. I mean, this morning, obviously, we're learning that they have made an arrest of the suspect from this case, which for many people will bring closure. There's yet a lot of work to be done, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I just think at the end of the day, and I talked with my friends last night when we were out this event. I had a board meeting yesterday afternoon for the CNIB board that I sit on, and we as a board, before the meeting got started, talked about this Charlie Kirk situation. It does not matter your political affiliation. You should be outraged. You should be angry. You should be demanding difference in the world, expecting difference in the world and of people. And we had commentators on the show yesterday, Brian Lilly, who is a political commentator who we welcome on this program all the time, who probably has a right lean to him. We had Warren Kinsella on the program, who is a friend of Brian Lilly's, a friend of our program as well, who probably through the years historically has had a bit of a left lean to him. It should not matter. You should be appalled by what happened to Charlie Kirk. And although it's a different country, and hundreds of kilometers away from us, it still, to me, has had an impact. And so, yeah, maybe that's what it was last night that I just, I felt like it was a much needed break from the reality and the heaviness of the news that we discuss all the time. So speaking of that, of course, we watched this morning, a news conference was held. Utah Governor Spencer Cox was the first speaker in the news conference. We played that clip this morning, but I'm going to replay for you now the way he opened the news conference.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident. This information was relayed to the Utah County Sheriff's Office and scene investigators at Utah Valley University. This information was also conveyed to the FBI. Investigators reviewed additional video footage from UVU surveillance and identified Robinson arriving on UVU campus in a gray Dodge Challenger at approximately 8:29 a.m. on September 10th. In which he is observed on video in a plain maroon t-shirt, light-colored shorts, a black hat with a white logo, and light-colored shoes. When encountered in person by investigators in Washington County on September 12th, in the early morning hours, Robinson was observed in consistent clothing with those surveillance images.
So the governor went on to say that, of course, they found the weapon. We knew that yesterday, a bolt-action rifle and bullets.
Investigators discovered a bolt-action rifle wrapped in a dark-colored towel. The rifle was determined to be a Mauser Model 98 30-06 caliber, 30-06 caliber bolt-action rifle. The rifle had a scope mounted on top of it. Investigators noted inscriptions that had been engraved on casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, notices, bulges, capital O-W-O, what's this, question mark. Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, "Hey, fascist, exclamation point, catch, exclamation point."
As part of the news conference this morning, the FBI director, Kash Patel, was also there. And in his speech, in his comments, said in 33 hours, they made what he called historic progress for Charlie Kirk's investigation.
This is what happens when you let good cops be cops. The FBI and our partners are proud to stand here today together to bring justice to the family of Charlie Kirk and honor his memory. I want to express my deep gratitude to President Trump, the Vice President, and the entire White House, who have been so incredibly supportive with both resources and just personally to the FBI as a team. They had our backs the entire way, and I just want to express my gratitude for giving us the resources we need to operate in this space to bring this sort of justice at this sort of speed. In 33 hours, we have made historic progress for Charlie.
So he essentially, through his speech, was very almost effusive in his praise for local law enforcement, state law enforcement, the way they've been able to work together. They released, of course, last night, further images and video of the suspect, which led to, they had 11,000 leads to go through. And of course, with the announcement this morning, he really dedicated that to what he says, good law enforcement can be great.
When the public, who had a right to demand such an expeditious solving of an investigation, the FBI answered that call diligently, critically important to our nation, and we delivered. And I'm proud to be their leader, and I'm proud to be the director of the FBI. This is a very much an ongoing investigation, as the governor said, and we will continue to work with state and local authorities to develop the investigation, to provide them the evidence they need for their ongoing prosecutions. And we will be here to answer every call they absolutely have, as long as it takes, for as long as we need to find and apprehend whatever suspects were involved in this crime.
Suspect arrested, of course, Tyler Robinson is his name, 22 years old. And essentially, what we found out from authorities is that his father was watching news reports on this online, seeing pictures of the suspect, and recognized it as his son. Can you imagine that conversation? He confronts his son. It sounds like his son maybe didn't use the words to admit it, but basically admitted that, yes, it was him that was involved. And it was right after that that authorities were notified and the arrest was made. So what's next? A lot. You can imagine they're going to obviously have to do an interview with the suspect to try and see what he will tell them. I would say, based on how this has gone down so far, there's a likelihood that he will talk with authorities and give some rationale behind the motive, why he did what he did. But along with that, they will be doing a deep dive into him. They will be executing search warrants on his house or his room where he lives. They'll be doing a deep dive into social media. They'll be talking to friends. They'll be doing a background write-up on him, of course, as well, and continue to put together evidence. A lot of people, I know, expect that what's left to do, if you get the suspect, and especially if the suspect in an interview says, yes, I did it, then what is there left? There is a lot left, because they will still want to put together a solid investigation that, number one, tracks evidence from the scene, video evidence, clothing, eyewitness, you name it. They will still want to put that together to be able to paint the whole picture when this goes to court. Obviously, the goal is to get this into court and to hold this offender accountable. So there's a lot left there. I am very curious, and I know I had some back and forth on the text line yesterday with a couple of people who I know didn't agree with me. I still stand by the fact that that shot, that gunshot, was not a shot of an amateur. Whether it was, there's some conflicting reports about the distance that it was away. We're hearing everything from 200 yards to 350. Regardless, you don't hear a flurry of gunshots there with a hope that one of the bullets hits the intended target. It was that was one shot. To me, that is a skilled marksman, and that is someone who has either got extensive training, whether it's military training, or someone who has trained to become proficient on the firearm that he used. because that shot, I mean, one shot clearly was the shot that killed Charlie Kirk. And I said this earlier, I wanted, this is open lines, 1-877-332-8255. I would love to hear you weigh in on this, but as people will be breathing a sigh of relief, this is a form of closure for all of the people that are following and impacted by this murder. And yesterday there was a text that came in that said, I don't understand why we're giving so much attention to this when we have people being killed in the United States and in Canada every day. Sadly, that is the truth. And there is no way that we should be minimizing those. This was not, at least we don't believe, I guess we'll find out definitively once the interview's done, but this was not a domestic situation. This was not a drug deal gone bad. This was not a lot of reasons that you often will see fall behind murders and violence in our country. This was for sure some sort of, whether it's political motivation, ideology. It may be that the suspect has some mental health issues. That may be because we know, there was a lot of issues that Charlie Kirk used to weigh into that would be very, very angering to many people, whether it's abortion, whether it's the stance he would take on diversity, equity, and inclusion, even religious beliefs for many people is something that they would be incited by and they would be angered by. Enough, though, to have writings on bullet casings and kill a person, take a life, perform an assassination, yet to be seen. 1-877-332-8255. Healthy to talk about. I'd like to hear your thoughts. 1-877-332-8255. I know I've got a number of texts pouring in. Maybe I'll start with Alan calling from Welwyn. Alan, thanks for calling in this morning. Your thoughts this morning. We hear the suspect has been arrested in this case. Hello, are you still there, Alan? Sorry, Frank, you might have to put Alan on the phone. I'm having some problems with my end here. So we'll get you on here in a second. Are you there now, Alan?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. I was having technical problems. Anyway, your thoughts on what we're watching this morning.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say about to Kirk, I just think it's a horrible, horrible disaster. It just sickened me to watch it.
Yeah.
I started reading and watching and listening to a bunch of things, and one of them was about this Tyler Robertson, supposed assassin. Like, if he had a Mauser rifle with a scope on it, how the hell did we not see pictures of that when he's walking around getting his ID? And then how did he get it off the roof? How did he carry it through a city without somebody seeing him? And that says that he was found with a screwdriver putting it back together. But if you ever had a rifle, especially a lever-action rifle, Evan, you know you wouldn't take it apart and put it together in seconds.
I wondered that, Alan, as well. Thanks. I want to hear more of what you've got to say. But when you see the video of him jumping off the roof, he's got a backpack. What did he do? Did he break it down on the roof, put it in his backpack as he fled? I think it's a fair question.
Not a chance in hell that he had time to do that. And then when he gets out there, he leaves it wide open for everybody to find, the FBI to pick it up. And he's 22 years old. Nobody could shoot somebody like that in the neck on purpose from 200 yards at 22 years old, unless you're a trained marksman or a very strong hunter, which I doubt he is. There's a whole lot of questions that'll be asked here again.
Lots of blanks to fill in for sure. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much, Alan, for calling in. 1-877-332-8255. Let's take a break. I know we've got more calls coming in on the line. I've got lots of texts coming in as well. By the way, it's open lines. So while I've started the conversation on the Charlie Kirk killing and the arrest of the suspect this morning, we've got nation building projects that were announced yesterday that some feel hit the mark. Others say we need to be patient, and some are saying nowhere close to what we need. Where do you fall on that? It's whatever you want to talk about. Open Lines continues next here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Anything you want, you got it. Anything you need, you got it. Anything at all, you got it.
Thanks so much for joining me, Evan Bray. Great to have you back on a morning where we are kind of looking back, reflecting on the week. Lots of different things happening. Of course, we've been talking about the Charlie Kirk murder. It's an assassination. It's there's a variety of words that you can use. I've been challenged by people saying that it was politically motivated. Maybe we'll see. Maybe I'll be proved wrong. I know I saw a text from Dylan, if I can find it quickly here. Said engravings on those bullets scream online incel, and then in quotes, if you can read this, you're gay. That was one of the inscribings, if you will, or engravings on the bullets that they found. They were covered after the fact. Dylan says this isn't politically motivated. It's going to turn out it's just an angry incel motivated to do this. So I guess we will see. Nonetheless, and I know there's a number of people that are saying again today, there's lots of murders, there's lots of killings. Why are we talking about this one? Well, the world is talking about this one. Whether you like it or not, whether you want to or not, the world is talking about this one. And this one has some political significance to it. Whether or not you were a Charlie Kirk follower, you could have been the most devout fan, or you could be a person that doesn't even have a clue who Charlie Kirk was. At the end of the day, this is significant. This is history that we're following. I am not at all going to get into and try and compare this to past murders. I've seen so many online fights where people compare this to Martin Luther King and others jump on. Who cares? Who cares? The reality is this happened. And your thoughts on the importance, the significance of this on a grander stage. Now, Ari with a text here that is concerning, but I'm reading it anyway because there is going to be an element of truth to this. Ari from Saskatoon says, mark my words, it will not take very long before this shooter will have as much of a celebrity cult following as the guy who shot the healthcare CEO. That will tell you how these things happen. It's called empowerment and a desperate search for fleeting fame. 1-877-332-8255. We're also getting into a complete side debate on the text line as to whether or not that shot was the shot of an accomplished marksman or not. Who knows? I guess we will find that out in the investigation as well. I still stand by the fact this guy had to have some different, more intimate knowledge of whether that weapon or just being a marksman in general than what I would call the general public has. I know there's a ton of people that are saying, Evan, I could shoot 450 yards. Yeah, you probably can. I'm not doubting it. I'm not doubting your proficiency. What I'm saying is, I don't think the general public can just do that, can just go randomly buy a gun and carry that out with some sort of expertise behind them. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, Open Lines continues. I've got a number of people that want to talk about, switch gears and talk about the five projects announced by Prime Minister Mark Carney yesterday as nation building projects. Phase one. Did he hit the mark? Your thoughts on that when we come back here on 650 CKOM, 980 CJME. Welcome back to the program. Evan Bray, as we open lines today, have started the conversation on the news that an arrest has been made in the Charlie Kirk murder. They have arrested a 22-year-old by the name of Tyler Robinson. His father, last night, after video and photos released of the suspect, recognized that it was his son, and ultimately calls were made to the authorities, and arrest has been made. So news conference was held this morning. Spencer Cox, the governor of Utah, and the FBI there to confirm that he has been arrested. And now, of course, the search for details of why. A couple of I'm going to take a couple of more callers. I got Evan, Calvin, and Jace standing by, so I'm going to get to the three of them. Oh, I think I just lost Evan. Okay, I still have Jace and Calvin. I'm going to get to them in a second. But on the text line, there's a number of people, and I don't know this, so I'm going to repeat what I'm reading on the text line, but I can't say this for sure. So when I talked about the shot, and I feel like this suspect responsible for this had some sort of advanced expertise as a marksman, as a shooter, a number of people are saying that the video actually shows that the shot hit a bulletproof vest that Charlie Kirk was allegedly wearing and then ricocheted up and hit his neck. I know I've seen a couple of things online about that, and I think, you know, you absorb so much information. I can't say for sure that's the case, but there are a number of people saying, and so people are pointing out, if that's the case, then a shot to the chest, or what training would show you is center mass, not to be benign about it, but at the end of the day, that shot, people are saying, doesn't necessarily indicate that this is an advanced marksman that did this. So, I don't know, and perhaps that will be part of what we hear either later today or as more details roll out on what the evidence shows of what happened in this case, and of course what we learn from the interview that they do with the suspect they've arrested. Let's go to the phone line. I want to grab a couple of more callers. I'll start with Calvin, who's on the road this morning. Calvin, your thoughts?
Actually, it's Kevin.
Sorry, Kevin.
No, your producer misheard me, but no big deal. I want to start with the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand in World War One, and him driving around, and I'm going to make a mockery of this a little bit, driving around the block two or three times before he actually got shot. Now, that started World War One, supposedly. Now, my history teacher back in high school years ago made a lot of fun about this one, and I think we have similarities here, and I'm going to leave this with the mainstream media video that was initially released. Charlie Kirk raised his right hand and scratched his nose after he set the mic down. There's two gentlemen standing to his right, and I'd like to know where the video of the guy in the white hat is, who then did a steel second sign, touched the rim of his hat as soon as Charlie, just like nanoseconds after Charlie touched his nose. And he's intently watching Charlie the whole time. Touches the rim of his hat, tugs his right ear, and the guy in the black, standing to the left of the guy in the white, moves forward and does an over-under with his left hand on his right elbow. As soon as that sign was made, a supposed shot was made. And I'm going to say supposed, and I'll leave it up to everybody else to review the tape to see all the bubbling of the shirt and everything else, because I don't want to be labeled a conspiracy theorist, God forbid. But if you tie this into the history of what we know in World War events that precipitate an action on behalf of governments, it's usually a problem, reaction, and solution situation. And I'm going to remain skeptical until I see the videotape of the guy that was standing there so intently watching Charlie with his phone recording the situation prior to the shot and then making these hand gestures. Kind of weird.
Appreciate your dissection of that, Calvin. I mean, there's so many. I won't say I've seen exactly what you just laid out online, but I have seen a number of people zooming in on some of the people that were right close to the stage and what role, if any, they played in this. Some suggest that they were giving a signal to the timing for the shooter. Others say that they were involved. I mean, there's a variety of theories, and that, of course, hopefully will be unfolded and ironed out for us here as the investigation continues. Appreciate the call, Kevin. Okay, let's go to Jace in Regina. Jace, thanks so much for calling in. Your thoughts on Charlie Kirk?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few things that I'm not happy about. Now, I want to say this. I don't condone violence in any way. I think it was wrong. I don't think he did deserve to die, but just some of the way people are talking about it and treating it. I mean, he wasn't a politician. You know, I don't think, you know, he was a YouTuber. He was a media influencer. He wasn't that important to the way that the world runs. And especially, I don't think he deserved to die. but a lot of his ideologies that he did have did end up with people dead. Like the way he talked about access to health care, access to abortion. He was a supporter of the Israeli genocide. And just his thoughts on guns and gun deaths. Like, you've heard the, you know, the quote, "I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights."
Yep, he did make that. That was a quote from him. You're right, Jace.
And, you know, I don't think, so himself saying, oh, if we want to have access to guns, well, some people need to die. Well, now look at where he is. And I don't think he deserves some of the other things. You know, Trump talks about giving him a Medal of Freedom, giving him half mast, you know. But when actual politicians were killed, the politician that was killed in Minnesota and the other politician attacked, they didn't get half mast. Trump said that it would be a waste of his time to call the governor.
You're right. I was very critical of the president for that. I think it was an absolute misstep as a leader. So, Jace, I appreciate your opinions. I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to grab one more call before we move on to a different topic. Diane, last speaker on this Charlie Kirk situation. Your thoughts?
Well, I wanted to make two points, Evan. First of all, I do concur with you in regards to this person being a marksman, and I think that we may find out that this is a broader conspiracy and that this person may not be the shooter. So I agree with you there, categorically. My second point, Evan, is in the beginning of your discussion on this topic, you mentioned that, you know, we're in Canada, we're safe, it's very innocuous here, and well, I just wanted to make this statement so that I know you have a lot of listeners, and so that people have the statement that I'm making running in the back of their minds, you know, constantly. So they're aware of what can happen in Canada and what is happening in Canada. Evan, I'm involved in a very high-level federal investigation right now, which involves the highest level of governance of this country, the Prime Minister's Office, the highest level of security intelligence, CSIS, the RCMP, and the military. I was born in this country. I'm a Canadian citizen. I'm actually a national hero, Evan, for something that I did in protecting the security of this country. Now, I have witnessed corruption at the highest level, Evan, and all of these entities that I've just mentioned to you that would shock any Canadian, any would-be Canadian, at the highest level. And, of course, I can't go into details here, but I just wanted to make this statement because people do think of Canada as a safe, you know, place for anyone. And it's not safe for me, Evan. And as I say, I'm a national hero and was awarded that status for my role in protecting the sovereignty of Canada at the highest level.
Diane, I appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts and much appreciation for the role you've played. And you're right. I mean, we can't say Canada is completely free of any chance of something like this happening. We can't say that. We've seen atrocious things happen on Canadian soil, whether they're politically motivated or not. It seems to be at a different level in the United States, and the list of recent events would indicate that. But you're right. It's not, we're not completely free of it here in Canada for sure. Okay, let's take another break, our last break in open lines before we come back. What I want to play for you next is an interesting clip from Premier Danielle Smith. Now, Danielle Smith met with Mark Carney just before he made the announcement of what these first five major projects were going to be. Danielle Smith, who has been at odds with and often strapping on boxing gloves to challenge the federal government, is encouraging people to be patient and actually putting forward comments that I would suggest are encouraging and appreciative of the steps that the federal government and maybe more specifically Prime Minister Mark Carney are taking on this. That news clip for you, and then more of your thoughts on that when we come back here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME. What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? What's going on? Oh, what's going on? What's going on? We found out this week what the first five major projects will be that the federal government planned to take a swipe at in relation to the nation building projects. We know there's actually a list of, what, some 32 that they are aggressively hoping to roll out through the next year or so. But yesterday, we found out they are going to be kicking it off with five projects. One of them, an LNG project in Kitimat, BC. So this project is actually partially already underway, which is the case with some of these, which is causing some people to be critical. These are not new projects in every case. When we get to Saskatchewan's in a second, that's the case there. But this LNG Canada Phase 2, based in Kitimat, BC, is an expansion of LNG. It will double Canada's production of liquefied natural gas. So that's one of the projects. The Darlington Nuclear Project is new in Bowmanville, Ontario. It would make Canada the first G7 country to have an operational small modular reactor. And as we talked about yesterday on the show, Saskatchewan is part of a group that basically it's almost like a think tank that come together and talk about the use of SMRs. Saskatchewan is on the path to make that part of energy production in the decade ahead. And so this in Ontario will have an ancillary benefit to us here in Saskatchewan. The terminal port project in Montreal, or just outside of Montreal, is being expanded by 60%. The Red Chris mine expansion in northwest British Columbia. And then, of course, the one here, the Foran copper mine project in east central Saskatchewan. So this is the one that many people, of course, are talking about here in Saskatchewan. A number of people are saying this isn't a new project. It's actually been going on for quite some time, which is true. It is not new. However, it's just outside of Creighton, Saskatchewan. And we heard from Creighton Mayor Bruce Fidler yesterday saying this is going to make a big difference. The federal government stepping in will make a big difference to reduce red tape. It will expedite the completion of the program, which is said to be done by 2026. And of course, they're saying could bring 400 new jobs to the area, which I saw a text yesterday from a fellow who said they're already, his company is already being contracted to move housing into the community of Creighton because they know they're going to need to expand. So we're hearing now reaction to this from, of course, many different people. Premier Mo, who is still over in Japan on trade missions, said he was pleased the Saskatchewan mine was included in the list, but was expecting a more ambitious list of projects given the Prime Minister's promise to build at a speed not seen in generations. He lamented on the lack of uranium projects on the list and, of course, the lack of a pipeline on the list as well, going on to say that there's lots of uncertainty around projects like a pipeline because of the regulatory system that we have right now. So Premier Mo going on to say that the current state of federal regulations is currently unworkable. The Impact Assessment Act, the Major Projects Office, and legislation are not conducive to solving the problem. So Premier Mo pushing for regulatory reform. I know the Saskatchewan NDP, their leader, Carla Beck, put a statement out saying they were deeply disappointed that none of the projects were around pipelines, power generation, or rail capacity, wanting to see that sort of trade-enabling infrastructure targeted. In Alberta, from someone who you think would be angry about this, Premier Danielle Smith had this to say.
When I looked at the first five projects, I thought, finally, they get it, because it's all the projects that have been difficult to build. It's mining projects, it's LNG Canada, and I think that that demonstrates a real shift in the focus of this government. I've seen that the Prime Minister has talked about supporting both conventional and new energy, and I think we're seeing that with some of these early announcements. And I would just ask people to be patient. I mean, we went from having chased away, what, $500 billion worth of investment over the last 10 years. You can't turn that around immediately. And so to have five major projects this quickly with the promise that through the Major Projects Office, located in Calgary, with led by Don Farrell, who does actually have some experience in building a bitumen pipeline to the West Coast. I think people should be encouraged that they've got the right person who's assessing those projects and that they're heading off in a good direction. Negotiation and discussion is the best way to be able to get to common understanding. And I found more common ground with the Prime Minister when I met with him yesterday than I have with any meeting with a Prime Minister. So I'm going to continue to work through to get our issues addressed, hopefully well before the end of the year, hopefully in time for that next tranche of announcements and at the Grey Cup. But I would just encourage Albertans to not lose faith in the process. Let's work together on it, because I think we're all stronger together if we can get to a point where Alberta is supported. It helps us and it helps the country.
I would have never expected that coming from the Alberta Premier, but she's basically saying, I think they get it. I think the federal government get it. Let's be patient. Let's work together. So it'll be interesting to see what more details on what was said in that meeting, perhaps with Prime Minister Mark Carney. All right, well, we are moving into Bugs and Hugs. It could be this topic that is on your mind. It could be a variety of different things, no matter how big or small. Bugs and Hugs is your opportunity to give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. Let us know what's bugging you or the hug you would like to send out for the next hour. Your time here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.